Original Ediacaran specimens, along with many of the other 1500 specimens that have been found throughout the Flinders Range since that time, can be seen in a glass case in an upstairs room of the stout and lovely South Australian Museum in Adelaide, but they don't attract a great deal of attention. The delicately etched patterns are rather faint and not terribly arresting to the untrained eye. They are mostly small and disc-shaped, with occasional vague trailing ribbons. Forte has described them as soft-bodied oddities. But there is still very little agreement about what these things were or how they lived. They had, as far as can be told, no mouth or anus with which to take in and discharge digestive materials, and no internal organs with which to process them along the way. In life, Forte says, most of them probably simply lay upon the surface of the sandy sediment, like soft, structureless, and inanimate flatfish. At their liveliest, they were no more complex than jellyfish. All the Ediacaran creatures were diploblastic, meaning they were built from two layers of tissue. With the exception of jellyfish, all animals today are triploblastic. Some experts think they weren't animals at all, but more like plants or fungi. The distinctions between plant and animal are not always clear even now. The modern sponge spends its life fixed to a single spot and has no eyes or brain or beating heart, and yet is an animal. When we go back to the Precambrian, the differences between plants and animals were probably even less clear, says Forte. There isn't any rule that says you have to be demonstrably one or the other. Nor is it agreed that the Ediacaran organisms are in any way ancestral to anything alive today, except possibly some jellyfish. Many authorities see them as a kind of failed experiment, a stab at complexity that didn't take, possibly because the sluggish Ediacaran organisms were devoured or outcompeted by the lither and more sophisticated animals of the Cambrian period. There is nothing closely similar alive today, Forte has written. They are difficult to interpret as any kind of ancestors of what was to follow. The feeling was that ultimately they weren't terribly important to the development of life on Earth. Many authorities believe that there was a mass extermination at the Precambrian-Cambrian boundary, and that all the Ediacaran creatures, except the uncertain jellyfish, failed to move on to the next phase. The real business of complex life, in other words, started with the Cambrian explosion. That's how Gould saw it, in any case. As for the revisions of the Burgess Shale fossils, almost at once people began to question the interpretations, and in particular, Gould's interpretation of the interpretations. From the first, there were a number of scientists who doubted the account that Steve Gould had presented, however much they admired the manner of its delivery, Forte wrote in Life. That is putting it mildly. If only Stephen Gould could think as clearly as he writes, barked the Oxford academic Richard Dawkins in the opening line of a review in the London Sunday Telegraph of Wonderful Life. Dawkins acknowledged that the book was unputdownable and a literary tour de force, but accused Gould of engaging in a grandiloquent and near disingenuous misrepresentation of the facts by suggesting that the Burgess revisions had stunned the paleontological community. The view that he is attacking, that evolution marches inexorably toward a pinnacle such as man, has not been believed for 50 years, Dawkins fumed. And yet that was exactly the conclusion to which many general reviewers were drawn. One, writing in the New York Times Book Review, cheerfully suggested that as a result of Gould's book, scientists have been throwing out some preconceptions that they had not examined for generations. They are reluctantly or enthusiastically accepting the idea that humans are as much an accident of nature as a product of orderly development. But the real heat directed at Gould arose from the belief that many of his conclusions were simply mistaken or carelessly inflated. Writing in the journal Evolution, Dawkins attacked Gould's assertions that evolution in the Cambrian was a different kind of process from today, and expressed exasperation at Gould's repeated suggestions that the Cambrian was a period of evolutionary experiment, evolutionary trial and error, evolutionary false starts. It was the fertile time when all the great fundamental body plans were invented. Nowadays, evolution just tinkers with old body plans. Back in the Cambrian, new phyla and new classes arose. Nowadays, we only get new species. Noting how often this idea, that there are no new body plans, is picked up, Dawkins says, "It is as though a gardener looked at an oak tree and remarked wonderingly, 'Isn't it strange that no major new boughs have appeared on this tree for many years? These days, all the new growth appears to be at the twig level.'" It was a strange time, Forte says now, especially when you reflected that this was all about something that happened 500 million years ago. But feelings really did run quite high. I joked in one of my books that I felt as if I ought to put a safety helmet on before writing about the Cambrian period, but it did actually feel a bit like that. Strangest of all was the response of one of the heroes of Wonderful Life, Simon Conway Morris, who startled many in the paleontological community by rounding abruptly on Gould in a book of his own, The Crucible of Creation. The book treated Gould with contempt, even loathing, in Forte's words. "I have never encountered such spleen in a book by a professional," Forte wrote later. "The casual reader of The Crucible of Creation, unaware of the history, would never gather that the author's views had once been close to, if not actually shared with, Gould's." When I asked Forte about it, he said, "Well, it was very strange, quite shocking really, because Gould's portrayal of him had been so flattering, I could only assume that Simon was embarrassed. You know, science changes, but books are permanent, and I suppose he regretted being so irremediably associated with views that he no longer altogether held. There was all that stuff about, oh fuck, another phylum, and I expect he regretted being famous for that." What happened was that the early Cambrian fossils began to undergo a period of critical reappraisal. Forte and Derek Briggs, one of the other principals in Gould's book, used a method known as cladistics to compare the various Burgess fossils. In simple terms, cladistics consists of organizing organisms on the basis of shared features. Forte gives, as an example, the idea of comparing a shrew and an elephant. If you considered the elephant's large size and striking trunk, you might